This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
A policy to apologize in advance for a shiur or for the lecture. One should somehow try and get away with it. In this case, though, I am, because we're dealing much in the same way as we were with the shiur earlier on, dealing with a very big and fascinating subject, and I just haven't had the time to do it justice. Not for want of trying. It's been one of those days where it's been a great pleasure. I've been busy preparing shiurim non-stop, with the exception of a quick lunch and davening since 2:30 this morning. But I figured out that I've got 6 shiurim to give in 24 hours, 4 of them major. And if you figure out that I do believe that the ratio should be 4 hours of preparation for every hour of giving, you'll figure out that unless I'm doing a lot of advance work, I don't stand a chance. And it just caught up with me today. So if one divides the 4 shiurim over the amount of time available in the day, there's just not enough time to really prepare each one fully. And it's such a fascinating topic that we'll certainly have to work on it in time to come, again and again, from different aspects. But I decided nevertheless to get started with it this evening, and just we'll see how it goes. I'll have to work it out with you as we go, and at least introduce you to the concept, which does tie in to a lot of what we've been discussing over the last week. And as I say, probably as we proceed over the coming weeks, the concept will become clarified. What is likely to emerge from the shiur this evening is a new insight into the change that came about in the world as a result of Adam HaRishon's chet. Adam HaRishon ate from the Eitz Hadas, and that changed the world. The difference, the way the world was before, as opposed to the way the world was afterwards, is a topic of fascination to the Beforshim and to Chazal. And I think we'll get a little bit of a new insight into it. That's one of the areas that I haven't fully worked out, and I'm not going to take full responsibility, so please, don't take this as the final shiur on the subject. We're still reasoning it out, we're still working it out. To a lesser degree, that applies to all the shiurim. So I've mentioned to you often that I really strongly disapprove of people coming in and out to these shiurim as they can make it. They're better off really not coming at all, because of the danger of hearing half the story. The shiurim are not, we try and make as far as possible each shiur to be a bit of a complete topic on its own, but there's no way it can be. It's an ongoing process of learning, of thinking, of developing, of expanding, and ideas grow and develop. And I've always said that the Motzei Shabbos shiur is a 10-year shiur. It's not an hour shiur, it's a 10-year shiur. And certainly in this case, if you're here tonight and you're not here in future weeks, you're likely to have a very incomplete picture. And then, in which case, all I beg you to do is, if you do tell anybody about the shiur tonight, just say that the guy talked a lot of rubbish and you didn't understand a word of it. Then we're both safe. You can't be accused of saying anything wrong, and I can't be accused of having said anything wrong, and Olam Kimin Hogo Noheg, everything will carry on as usual. There's some fascinating medroshim on today's Sedra regarding the final hours of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. Moshe Rabbeinu was dumbstruck with disbelief at the fact that he was actually going to die. And that in itself is amazing to us. What did he think? It appears from the medroshim that it's the last thing that entered Moshe's mind that he was actually going to die. Amar, he said, Moshe said, Ribono Shel Olam, אחר כל עושה הכובד ועושה הגבורו שרואו עיניי, אני מת. After all that honor and all that power which my own eyes have seen, are you telling me that I'm going to die? What I've lived through, what I've managed to achieve in my life. And that statement alone, were it not for the work we've put in over the last week or so, would be beyond explanation. What's the one going to do with the other? All the cover that you've seen and all the gvuros, you shouldn't die for that. That's because you had some yichus and because you did a great job of work. Is that a reason to be eternal, never to die? What's Moshe Rabbeinu's having in? Total disbelief. Ribbono shel Olam, what are you doing to me? Really? You're telling me I'm going to die? All right. You told me I went there to Eretz Yisrael. I've accepted that. So I live in the desert, but die? But we now understand Moshe Rabbeinu's question. It's a very good question. We talked last week, and we've been discussing at various opportunities since then, the two natures that govern the world, the laws of physics and the laws of miracles, and that the human being is capable of overriding the laws of physics. We talked about the solar system and about the lunar system, and how the Ribbono shel Olam subjects the solar system to the lunar system, and nature subjects itself to the rulings of the moon. And the moon is subject to our decisions here. And the Talmidei Chachomim and the Tzadikim of the generations are able to decree through that relationship to nature in a way which demands nature's response. The second kind of nature, the miraculous form of nature. As we said this morning, just as important as it is to believe that nature is a miracle, that everybody believes. Religions and among all spiritual people, how important it is to appreciate the miraculousness of nature. What's unique to Yiddishkeit is to appreciate the naturalness of miracles. That's something which other religions don't have. Other religions get very impressed by miracles and they get shaken by miracles, and it has great effect on them. That's a sign of primitiveness. Primitive people are impressed by nisim and nifloos. You tell a primitive person, a so-and-so did, you know what he did? Said abracadabra, and somebody was ill, got better the next day. Wonderful. A primitive person is impressed by that. An intellectual person, a spiritual person, is totally unimpressed by it. He takes it for granted. Miracles are natural. A tzaddik is able to dictate to nature, and there's no reason that it shouldn't be that way. The second paragraph of our Shema, Hayodim Shomea Tishmu, if you listen to the mitzvahs of the Ribbono shel Olam, then nature will respond with rain in the right times and with produce, etc., etc. If you don't, then there will be drought and famine. Isn't that a miracle? Sure, it's a miracle. But the second paragraph of the Shema teaches us the naturalness of miracles. That being the case, Moshe Rabbeinu has a wonderful question. Ribbono shel Olam, he says, who has conquered nature more than me? I survived for 40 days and 40 nights without eating, without drinking on Har Sinai. I've been able to do things. I've been able to visualize you. I've been able to communicate with you. I've been able to do things that have been banned to any human being before who's been governed by the laws of physics and the laws of nature. And yet with you, I've been able to do it through overcoming the limitations of nature and of the laws of physics. Why can't I overcome the laws of physics and not die also? Death is a natural thing. But I don't operate naturally, Ribbono shel Olam. I've overcome the laws of nature over and over again. Why is death going to overcome me? Why can't I overpower death as well? That's an amazing question that Moshe Rabbeinu asks. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe, Mi geber yichye v'lo yireh movis. Quotes him a pasuk from Tehillim. What powerful man is there that can live and not see death? Omar HaKadosh Mi geber ka'avron. Who's more powerful than Avraham? She yorad l'kib shon ha'esh. He says, do you think you're the first one, Moshe Rabbeinu? Avraham went into a furnace of fire and he came out alive. Is there any better example of conquest of nature? Yes, Avraham died. Yitzchak gave himself on the Akedah, and in terms of Avrosh on second day Rosh Hashanah, you'll understand the conquest of nature that there was in that. And he had to die. And so it goes on this thing. You're not the first one that has conquered nature and has to die. It doesn't answer the question. It calms him. It shows him that in fact there is a pattern and a precedent. It's not something so amazing, but it doesn't really answer his question. And we're not going to explain that medrash. But it's in the next medrash that we see a little bit more of an answer to Moshe Rabbeinu's question. כך אומר משה רבינו, וכך אומר משה רבינו שלי, למד בוב כריסוס היי. There are 36 Averus, which involve Chorus, the cutting off a spiritual death sentence. Shim Yavir Odom al Echod Mehem, Chayev Misa. That if a person is over one of them, he's guilty of death. Shemo Avati al Achaz Mehem, have I been over one of those Averus? Have I transgressed one of those Averus as Moshe Rabbeinu? So why are you decreeing death on me? What have I done to deserve death? Here the Medrash poses the question a little bit differently. On the one hand, the first Medrash speaks about his power, his conquest of nature, and the second Medrash talks about his tzidkus, which really is the same angle that Moshe Rabbeinu is taking. Why is death affecting me? Why am I not on the stature to be able to overcome death? Amalei answers Moshe Rabbeinu, answers Rabbeinu Shleilom, V'chatoyo shel Odom Harishon Atomis, Shehevi Misaloyo. You're right, Moshe Rabbeinu. You didn't do anything deserving of death. You're dying because of the sin of Odom Harishon. He brought death into the world. That's Rabbeinu Shleilom's answer. And that means that the Rabbeinu Shleilom here introduces an exception to the rule that we developed last Motzei Shabbos and over the last week. Man is capable of conquering nature, yes. Man is capable of releasing himself of the bounds and the limitations of nature, yes, with one exception. Listen. Natural death, nobody can release themselves from that. There's no way that can be conquered. That remains a power that nature has over us, which we cannot overcome. And I think that this is something that I haven't checked through yet. But here we begin to see an attitude to the difference between the world before and after the Chet of Adam HaRishon. Before the Chet of Adam HaRishon, there was Misa. I'll show you in a Medrash just now. Death was not created after Adam HaRishon's sin. Death was created during the 6 days of Reishis, the time right at the beginning death was created. So what was it created for if people weren't to die? And it's not just people who weren't to die. Nobody and nothing was going to die if it weren't for the Chet of Adam HaRishon. So what was the role of death? We'll be discussing that still. What is the role of death? Be that as it may, one thing is clear. Death existed before the Chet. The same as all natural limitations existed before the Chet. The only thing is death was no exception. And just as the human being could overpower nature on every level, just as the human being could overcome natural limitations and could dictate to nature, raise nature, mold nature, and make nature work for him, not against him, he did not have to submit himself to the limitations of nature. That rule included death. Through the raising of his own stature, the human being could overcome death and could live eternally, just as he could overcome anything else. If he could make a rock to bring forth water, and if he could revive the dead, he could certainly avoid himself dying. That's a power that the human being has. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave every human being that ability through becoming a perfect human being and elevating nature with him and thus overcoming the forces of nature. After the Chet of Adam HaRishon, death became separate to the other laws of nature. The rest of nature could still be governed by man. Death could no longer be governed by man. The introduction of death as an inseparable part of life, it was the result and the consequence of Adam HaRishon's faith. Whereas before, death was not an inseparable part of life. It could be separated from life, and it was separated from life. After the Chet of Adam HaRishon, death was an inseparable part of life. And any living person, by virtue of his being alive, also had to succumb ultimately to death. That's part one. Part two, there is a strange relationship between death and the Yetzer Hara. And that relationship we see in many writings about the Chet of Adam HaRishon itself. Exactly what I've just explained regarding death is often explained regarding the Yetzer Hara in terms that are difficult to understand. I say before the chet of Adam HaRishon, the Yetzer Hara was separate from man. It was in the snake. After the chet of Adam HaRishon, it became incorporated into man. Be that as it may, whatever that means, that doesn't mean anything unless one analyzes it and understands it. But that's what he said, and it's parallel to what we've just said about death. Before death, the death was separate to man and could be conquered by man. After the chet, death becomes an inseparable part of life and cannot be conquered by man. Another place where we see the relationship between the Yetzer Hara and death is in the Midrash in Bereishis. Rav Nachman bar Shmuel bar Nachman b'shem Rav Shmuel bar Nachman Omar said, Hinei Toiv Me'od. What does it mean at the end of the creation? It says, and behold, it was exceptionally good. Zeh Yetzer HaToiv. This is the Yetzer HaToiv. When the Ribbono Shel Olam saw the creation of the Yetzer HaToiv, it was good. Hinei Toiv Me'od. But what was exceptionally good about it? Zeh Yetzer Ra. That was the Yetzer HaToiv. Ask the Medrash, V'chi Yetzer Hara Toiv Me'od. Is the Yetzer Hara such a wonderful thing? It's amazing. Elo she'ilule Yetzer Hara, that answers the Medrash. Were it not for the Yetzer Hara, lo bono odom bayis, people would not build houses, v'lo noso isho, and people would not get married, v'lo holi, and they would not have children, v'lo noso v'noson, and they would not do business. It's also an interesting concept that we need to analyze. That it's the Yetzer Hara is responsible for all the material achievements in the world. And therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam was very gratified when he saw the Yetzer Hara having been created. A little bit further, Omar Rabbi Shmuel bar Yitzchak, Hinei Toiv Me'od Zeh Malach Chayim. It's very good. That's talking about the angel of life. And behold, in addition, the second time it was extremely good. That was the angel of death. Oh, extremely good. The Ribbono Shel Olam had a lot of nachas. He saw the Malach HaMoves. Ah, Toiv Me'od, Gishmak. That's exactly how it's supposed to be. What does it mean? Echi Malach HaMoves, Toiv Me'od, ask the Gemara, is the Malach HaMoves so wonderful? It's amazing. The Medrash gives an example. Like a king who throws a party. He invites visitors. And he brings before them a dish full of most delicious treats. Amari said, whoever eats and makes a toast to the king should eat and have a good time. And anybody who eats and will not bless the king, Yutaz Roshay Besayif, his head will be chopped off with a sword. So let's have some fun, says the king. We'll play some Russian roulette. You're all welcome to eat if you want to, but anybody who eats without making a toast, you're not going to get out of here alive. Kach Bishu Mesagel Mitzvah Samayis and Tevim, says somebody who treasures mitzvahs and good deeds, Harei Malach HaChayim, he has the angel of life. And if he doesn't, he's got the angel of death. What does it mean? The angel of death gives meaning to life. If there was no death, there would be no meaning and no value to life. The contrast is necessary. We've often commented, if you play roulette with chips that don't have any monetary value, then you can't lose. There's no meaning to winning either. You spoil the whole game. One should think, what a wonderful thing. Imagine you can gamble without being able to lose. You can't win either. There's no fun. You lose the fun altogether. What gives meaning, what gives value and excitement to the whole exercise? The fact that you can lose every penny you've got. That makes it worthwhile. Imagine you go into business and somebody gives you a blank check, backs you up, whatever you lose, there's no fun. It can't operate, it can't work, and it can't succeed. The challenges and the tensions which are necessary for success, aren't there? Tension is necessary. Without tension, there cannot be achievement. One of the mistakes that the Western world is making at the moment, in its efforts to eliminate tension. If you eliminate tension, you eliminate life. There has to be tension. A machine only works with tension. A musical instrument only works with tension, and a human being only works with tension. Remove the tension and there's no life. One doesn't need aggravation, that's another thing. But one has to be able to discern between aggravation and tension. The Malach HaMovitz creates the tension and strings of life which are just right to be able to make music. If you take the Malach HaMovitz away, it's like undoing the strings of the violin and making them slack, and then you can't make any music at all. That's the Tov Me'id, the tuning of life, the fine tuning of life. That's the Malach HaMovitz, the angel of death. That's part two. Part three. This concept of death is not just a one-off event, something that happens to a person after 120 years. That's not what we mean by death. The introduction of death brings with it a whole lot of side issues as well. It brings natural deterioration, fatigue. All these things are part of the world of the Malach HaMovitz. The fact that things don't last forever. The fact that things deteriorate, that the natural nature requires deterioration. And don't forget, everything else can be conquered by nature, but not death. You can't, no matter how great you are, you can't stop things wearing out. No matter how great you are, you can't stop old age creeping on. No matter how great you are, you can't stop ultimate death. Doesn't just mean the ultimate death. The whole process of dying, which starts the moment one's born, that can't be stopped. That's how it is. It has another very important effect. We said death creates the tension. But in order for a tension to be properly utilized, has to be very, very finely balanced. Death creates the framework in which life takes place. But death is not meant to be life itself. Death is only the tension in which life is meant to be the music. The only thing is, you can't play the music if you don't have a background of tension. The bow has to go up and down on a string which is tense. Otherwise the music doesn't come. But the tension itself is not what makes the music. Rabbi Lipschitz in Eretz Yisrael has developed an entire system of psychology based on this concept. And he's criticized very validly and very scientifically Western psychiatry and psychology in their missing out on some of these basic elements. What is the consequence of the fear of death? Because the big thing that the Malach HaMovitz brings with him is fear. You might remember the discussion we had in the Kubler-Ross a little while ago, where she claimed that there are only two natural fears that a human being has: the fear of falling from height and the fear of sudden noise. And we showed that that was untrue, that neither of those fears are natural fears. There's only one natural fear from which the human being suffers, and that's the fear which she said is artificial. The fear of death. The fear of death is the only natural fear which you cannot escape, no matter who you are and how great you are. You can be 20 Kubler-Rosses, and believe me, she's as scared of death as anybody else is. You have to be scared of death. That's how it was created. That was the chet of Adam HaRishon, and there's no way that can be overcome. How does one handle the fear of death? What does one do with it? The fear of death leads one into two possible channels of activity. The one is handled something along the lines that you would handle an oncoming car with its bright lights on. You don't look at the lights, you look at the curb next to you, and you keep your eyes low, and you'll be alright. If you look at the lights, you won't be alright. Sometimes one has to handle the thing not head on. Sometimes one has to avoid it altogether. The one method of handling the fear of death is by avoiding it altogether. How does that happen? When a human being is being created, in an ultimate sense, he's involved in something eternal. When a human being is not involved with himself or with an object, but with the relationship between himself and an object, then he's involved in something eternal. If I'm involved in myself, I'm going to die one day. That's not eternal. If I'm involved in an object, that's going to deteriorate one day. It's not going to be around one day. That's not eternal. But relationships are eternal. That's concepts already. That's something which never dies. Again, to use the same image, the violinist will die, and the violin will die, but the music will never die. The relationship between the violin and the violinist, that's eternal. That's not subject to death. So in a way it is possible to conquer death. Not head on. But it's possible to involve ourselves in activities where at the time of those activities at least, we're not involved in death at all, we're involved in eternal things. And when you're involved in something eternal, you don't fear death, you don't fear finality, you don't fear conclusion. You're involved in something eternal. And in order to be involved in something creative requires the utilization of the total human personality. All the kochos, all the talents which the Ribbono Shel Olam has blessed you with, need to be utilized harmoniously in one action in order to fully express oneself in a creative way. If one is not doing that, then there are parts of the human being, at least, if not the entire human being, which is not involved in eternity, which is not being fulfilled, which is not expressing itself. As long as there's a part of the human being which is not involved in something eternal, it starts getting scared, that part. Starts feeling time going by, not achieving, not doing, what's going to happen. Death creeping up, old age creeping up. And what is the response then? The need to feel alive. The need to feel alive is the compensation that one needs when one gets scared of death. And the need to feel alive has expressed itself in all forms of material and hedonistic endeavors. So you build monuments to yourself, whether it's a building, or whether it's a business, or whatever it is. One starts building for oneself. One starts cultivating oneself. One starts stimulating oneself. One takes drugs. One involves oneself in overeating. One becomes a hypochondriac. One involves oneself in sexual exploits until that they really are alive. That they really are here, that they are really real, and that life is going on. This tremendous fear that life is passing me by, that I'm not really living, that time is passing, but I'm not living. That's the fear of death that hurts a person and drives him to do things which are not necessarily healthy for him. And it's from that advertising thrives. Advertising knows that the human being is feeling that he's not alive, so anything they can portray as life gets sold. Because everybody's so desperate for life. Exactly like the Prophet Chaim went around calling, who wants a medicine which will guarantee life, who wants a medicine? All the people came running and running and running. They thought he was going to dish out Coca-Cola. It wasn't. He quoted them the apostle of Mi Ha'isha Chofetz Chaim, anybody who wants life. And so it goes on, what they must do, how they must wash themselves, and how they must wash their tongues in order to be guaranteed life. So the fear of death, on the one hand, is that which gives value to life, and on the other hand, is the source of the Yetzer Hara. If there wasn't a fear of death, there wouldn't be a Yetzer Hara. If there wasn't a fear of death, we wouldn't need to convince ourselves that we're alive. There would be no reason to eat one little bit more than we need for our bodily sustenance. There would be no necessity to work one drop more than one needs to earn a living in order to exist. There would be no necessity to involve oneself in any form of hedonistic pleasure whatever, except that which is necessary in order to be Mekayim Torah Mitzvah. Everything else would become unnecessary. It's only because we have this urge to feel alive and we're afraid that we're missing out or that we're not really living, that we try and use our bodies, our senses to feel real things. Maybe we're alive. The difference is the creative person imposes himself upon his surroundings. He feels creative because he imposes a sense of order on that which is around him. That's what makes him feel eternal. The hedonist person, the person who's infected with the fear of death, he makes himself the object of the world around him. He knows there has to be a relationship. Let me feel, let me be touched, let me have food put into my stomach. Let the world convince me that I'm alive. Power, applause, honor. All that is part of the human being's desperate endeavors to be recognized and to feel alive. A person who's being created doesn't need it. Doesn't need the power, doesn't need the honor, doesn't need the food, nothing. Just what he needs to exist. Alive. What do you mean alive? He's involved in itzchus. He's involved in eternal relationships. He feels alive like nobody else can imagine. And so we find mitzvah, death, is that hinge on which both the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov revolve. Without death, there is no meaning to life. Without death, there is no Yetzer Hara. The two draw their sustenance from death. That's the end of part three. Part four. How does Moshe Rabbeinu has understood this? What does he do? What does he do about it? He asked a question and the Ribbono Shel Olam has answered him. Says the Medrash. Omer Rabbi Yanai, Dorache, Rabbonon Amri, the Rabbonon said, Kivan Sheyoda Moshe Shehoyo Loi Lomus Boisa Hayoi Meoso. What did Moshe Rabbeinu do now that he knew he was inevitably going to die? The bad news had struck him finally. He has to die. There's nothing he can do about it. What did he do? Amar Rabbi Yanai, said Rabbi Yanai, Kosov Yud Gimel Torahs. He wrote 13 Sifrei Torah that day. 13 Sifrei Torah. Do you know how much does the Torah cost nowadays? What? 20,000 what?
Dollars.
Dollars. Dollars. $20,000 a Sefer Torah, so 13 Sefer Torah? No, $260,000, isn't it? $260,000 in one day, that's productive labor. $260,000 in one day, and that wasn't the most productive day he had in his life. It was a productive day. That's what he started doing. Yud Beis Shvotim, 12 for the 12 tribes, the Achas in Niyad Be'orah. And one he was going to leave in the Oron, Shim Yivakesh Echod Bezayev Dover, Shiyumitsunoisheb Oron. That if anybody should want to distort the Torah, they could always refer to the Torah which was kept locked up in the Oron, and they could check the authenticity of the text. What was the idea of that? Moshe Rabbeinu hit on a brainwave. I can't control death, but everything else I can. All the rest of nature I can. The Malach HaMoves believes he's going to get me to death. I can't do anything about that. I can't stop the Malach HaMoves. But I can make sure that I'm learning Torah, and while I'm learning Torah, at least, there's no way that the Malach HaMoves can get me. Amar Moshe, mitoich shani osuk b'Torah shekulo chayim. Since I am involved in Torah, which is all of life, Hayoim Shokea, Vagzeiro Betela. The day will pass, and the Malach HaMoves will have missed his opportunity. While I'm learning, he can't get me, and this is going to take me more than a day, and I'll be safe. Here we see that the story that we developed in part three. Creativity is the counterpart to the Malach HaMoves. There is nothing which is so totally all-embracing of the human personality, the Nimud HaTorah, the learning of Torah. The learning of Torah is not an intellectual exercise. It is not possible to understand the Torah unless one is incorporating one's entire personality. One needs one's mind. One needs one's emotions. One needs one's sensitivities. One needs one's senses. One needs to be alive and alert in every aspect. And that way one can learn Torah. That's why we like to learn Torah b'chavrusa. One of the ways of acquiring Torah is together with people. There's a social side to learning Torah. There's got to be speech, not just reading. There's an audio side. There's an audio side to Torah. All the senses are involved. We work with sorim. We point. We use our finger. The fingers touch the words. Every part of our bodies and every part of our personalities have to be involved while with Torah. And each person is able to use his personality in a unique way in the learning of Torah. One is strong in intellectual analysis. Another one is strong in poetic sensitivity. Another one is strong in social emotion. Each one finds the areas where he's strong, and using his strength, he's able to express himself and to develop his personality within the Torah. And that involves him in something which is totally creative, totally spiritual, totally nitzchi, totally eternal. At that point, he escapes the effect of death completely. Me'asa Kodesh Baruch Hu. How did the Rebbe Yishlom respond to that? Romaz Lashemesh. He gave the wind to the sun. And the sun stood still. Omar Eini Shekeil Moshe Kayim Ba'ilom. Says, I won't set, and as long as I don't set, Moshe is still around in the world until he's finished his job. When he's finished his job, the Malach HaMavos can get him, then I'll set. Instruction from the Ribbono Shel Olam to the sun. It's possible in the light of our previous shiurim that Moshe Rabbeinu could have countered that instruction had he noticed. He was so engrossed in his learning that he didn't even notice the sun wasn't moving on, the day wasn't getting on. The sign of total creativity is unawareness of time passing. If one is aware of time passing, one knows that one is not involved creatively at all. And anybody who's used to speaking knows that the measure of the creative involvement of one's audience is their watch. The number of times they look at their watch will measure exactly how creatively involved they are. Doesn't mean they're bored necessarily, it doesn't mean they're late, and all it means is that they're not creatively involved, they're listening. As we've discussed the shiur last night, there are two ways of listening to a shiur. There's a creative involved way, and there's a passive way of listening to a shiur. The person who's listening passively will be aware of the passage of time. The person who's listening actively, who's emotionally involved, and his personality is totally involved, doesn't look at the time. That's why when you're watching a good movie, you don't notice the time going by. It grabs the entire personality, it involves you completely. And it's a shame, it's a terrible indictment against our society. But when one is looking at a Hollywood production, one doesn't notice time going by, and one's learning Torah Hashem, one notices time going by. That's where we hold it. But it's merely a measure of the involvement of the personality. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't notice it, the sun had stood still. His involvement was so extreme and was so total. The Midrash goes on to part 5. Eventually, Moshe Rabbeinu figured that he could strike a deal with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Omar Lefonov, he said, Ribbono Shel Olam, Yitol Yehoshua Elki Sheli Ve'ehei Chai. Let Yehoshua take over my office and leave me alive. Moshe Rabbeinu did not want to relinquish life. So powerful was life, and he realized what could be achieved in a lifetime, that he was reluctant to let his life go by, although he was 120 years old. Test this challenge. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribbono Shel Olam, says to Yehoshua, Asei loy kederech shehu oseh lo. Right, Yehoshua, he says, from now on you take over, and you relate to Moshe Rabbeinu as he related to you. Miyad hishki Moshe v'holach lebeitzo shel Yehoshua. Moshe was thrilled. He's been given a lease of life, gets up early in the morning, and he goes to the house of Yehoshua. Yehoshua is now the boss. He's going to help Yehoshua, to stand by his side, to serve him as Yehoshua did to him. Nisroli Yehoshua. Yehoshua got afraid. Moshe Rabbi, boy etzli. Moshe Rabbeinu, kamut mi yotzu lihiluch. They went for a walk. Halach Moshe lismoylo shel Yehoshua. And for the first time, Moshe walked on the left-hand side of Yehoshua. Nichnasu l'oihel moyed. That's the din. If you've got two people walking together, then the greater one is on the right hand side of the smaller one. The smaller one is on the left hand side of the greater. If you have three, then the greater one is in the middle, and on his right is the second, and on his left is the third. So Moshe Rabbeinu takes up his place for the first time on the left of Yehoshua, not on the right. Nichnasu l'oihel moyed. They go into the Oihel Moed. You can imagine Moshe's excitement to see his Talmud taking over his place. Yorad Omud He'onon v'hifsik b'ineim. The Omud He'onon, the cloud of glory, came down like a curtain between the two of them. Moshe Rabbeinu waits outside. Mishenistalek Omud He'onon. He waited eagerly. And as the Omud Ha'onan lifted again, Holach Moshe to Yehoshua, Moshe rushed to Yehoshua, and he said to him, Ma Malach Ha'adibah, what did the Ribbono Shel Olam tell you? Omud Yehoshua said, Yehoshua, כשהיו הדיבור נגלו עליך, יודע יצא מה מדברינו? When you used to go alone into the Beis HaMikdash, did I ever know what was going on there? None of your business. At that moment, Moshe Rabbeinu let out a shriek. The Omar, and he said, let me die 100 times rather than be jealous once. What does that mean? Moshe Rabbeinu was jealous. Moshe Rabbeinu, who had conquered nature, and as we discussed on Rosh Hashanah, the greatest conquest of nature is the conquest of our own nature, and we know to what extent Moshe Rabbeinu had conquered his own nature. What's this kino? What's this jealousy all of a sudden? A complete diminution of Moshe Rabbeinu's stature? Why? When the human being is not fulfilling his unique capacity, because every human being has a unique capacity. His unique capacity means taking all his koyches, all the talents which the Ribbono Shel Olam gave him, and harmonizing them into one direction. It must be, it's not possible that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a talent which wasn't meant to be used. And all those talents have to be geared into one direction, otherwise in that area the talent is wasted. Provided one is using all one's talents in one area, one is involved in chayim, one is involved in life. If one is not, one is subject to nisal, one is subject to death, there is a part of oneself that is undergoing death during life. There is a talent, there is an aspect of personality which is not being fulfilled, and therefore that talent, that personality, at that moment is dead. And when one is dead, all sorts of things, then the Yetzirah takes on, then one needs other forms of being fulfilled. Moshe Rabbeinu lost his unique capacity. Moshe Rabbeinu was created to lead the Am Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu was created to go into that Mishkan and to communicate with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Moshe Rabbeinu was created to be the Navi Hashem, to be a prophet of the Ribbono Shel Olam, such that like there has never been before, Loikambi or afterwards, Loikambi Yisrael, Kamishoed Novi. There has never been in Yisrael a Novi such as Moshe. That was Moshe Rabbeinu, that was his uniqueness, that was his specialness. It was in that area and in that area only that he could use all his faces. For the first time in his life, he finds that he's got to live a life without full utilization of his faces. He's got to run on four cylinders instead of six. Two of these cylinders are lying unutilized. At that moment, for the first time in his life, he gets jealousy. What's happened to Moshe Rabbeinu? This is the most amazing midrash, because we see from here a whole system of avodas Hashem, a whole system of working upon oneself. One's jealous, what does one do? So you say, mustn't be jealous. Doesn't help, mustn't be jealous. How do you not be jealous? It's not something you can control. The only way you can control it, we see, is by total utilization of one's entire personality. When the artist is busy playing the violin, he's not jealous of anybody, not even jealous of better artists. All he's interested in is that his music should be as close to perfection as possible. When he's finished playing, and he's having cocktails with people downstairs or in the hotel, that's when he starts getting jealous. Because at that moment, he's both artist. At that moment, he's not an artist anymore. At that moment, he's an animal. He's forgotten to be an artist. He's an ordinary animal with all these tithes, with all these desires, with all these base human or animal needs and ambitions. And at that moment it bothers him. And if he'll hear anybody say, oh, he played not badly tonight, but not like so-and-so, it will consume him with rage and with envy. Whereas had he overheard it, theoretically he wouldn't have heard it because he would have been totally involved. But even had he overheard such a thing while he was playing, it wouldn't have bothered him. He's involved in much bigger things. Moshe Rabbeinu has finished the concerto. And for the first time in his life, unlike a musician is a musician when he's playing his music, when he's practicing, when he's performing. An artist is an artist when he's painting. A Yid is an artist every moment of his life. There's not one moment where he's permitted to be in a situation where he's not utilizing his entire personality. That's why the Higisabo Yoimon Velayla, you think in Torah day and night. If you're working in an area which isn't using your whole personality, think in Torah as well and involve yourself in Torah as well at that time. There should be no moment when one isn't totally involved in things creative, totally involved in things eternal, and totally involved in things which are sanctified. And so Moshe Rabbeinu through his entire life was doing such things. for the first time he has the same experience Lahavdil that the artist, the concert performer has when the concert is over and he goes down and he has a drink. All of a sudden there's Yeshua and an entire part of his existence is cut out from his life, and the bad midas start coming in. Now he realizes that that conquest of nature is no longer possible. He cannot conquer nature if he's unfulfilled. He can only conquer nature when he's totally fulfilled and when he's totally self-expressed. And he pleads to the Ribbono Shel Olam, rather than chas v'sholom, I should experience for the first time in my life a pang of jealousy. Let me die 100 times rather than to be dead in a living sense. Let me rather be dead in every way than to be a living corpse. Somebody who operates in a way which is inhuman, in a way which is subhuman, certainly on the levels that the Torah requires of humanity. Those are the 5 parts. As I mentioned, each one of those 5 parts could, with the right amount of time and presentation, be a shiur on its own, and in Yud Hashem over the month, and I'm sure will become shiurim on their own. But what we see here is the concept. Death as an exception to the normal laws of nature. Whereas any human being is capable of overcoming the other laws of nature, death is something by Odom HaRishon's choice which cannot be overcome. We see that death can be overcome only temporarily, or the effects of death can be overcome by creative involvement, by the performing of a mitzvah. At the moment one's involved in a mitzvah, if one's involved with all one's heart and with all one's mind and with all one's soul and everything that one's got, one invests into that mitzvah. At that moment one is completely free from the fear of death and from the consequences of the fear of death, which is the Yetzer Hara. At that moment there's no interest in doing anything that one shouldn't do, or thinking anything that one shouldn't think, or saying anything that one shouldn't say. It disappears completely. At that one moment one has conquered death. And finally, the concept that at any moment that one isn't in such a situation, one opens oneself to the bad midas, one opens oneself to the characteristics which are inevitable under such circumstances. Even a Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was unfulfilled, started to feel jealousy. How much more so ourselves. How careful we have to be to understand ourselves, to analyze ourselves, who we are, what koiches we have, what talents we have, what powers we have, and make sure that those talents are incorporated. I spoke to you last night about the sense of dissatisfaction that I have to a large degree with the quality of learning, particularly of shiur learning, in preparation for shiurim, in the sense that it's passive, it's not active, it's not creative, it's not thinking. That people hear a shiur, and that if we're lucky, they hear it correctly, and if we're even luckier, they remember some of it, but there's not a creative involvement in the learning. We discussed one aspect of that last night. The other aspect of that is, applies not only to learning but to all the mitzvahs. If one governs without complete involvement, if one learns without complete involvement, if one has a Shabbos without complete involvement, if one says Kiddush and Havdolah without complete involvement, if one sits in one sukkah without complete involvement, if one shakes one's lulav and esrog without complete involvement, what is it doing to one? One says nothing. It's not elevating one in any way. A mitzvah, in order to elevate one has to elevate the mitzvah. And to elevate the mitzvah requires every little bit of human capacity that you've got. And during the time that that's doing, one's able to free oneself of all the base feelings, desires, needs, ambitions that we really want to free ourselves from. At least momentum. While we're busy on the mitzvah, it's possible to reach these incredible levels of conquest of nature. At least of conquest of our own nature, and from there, who knows what can happen. But it's not possible to conquer our own nature if there isn't total involvement during the times that we're doing our mitzvahs. So it applies to everything that we do, to the shiurim that we listen to. There has to be that toil, there has to be that effort, there has to be the application of mind. Somehow education has become and is becoming a system of imparting information. And as far as the Torah education is concerned, that's an antithesis to everything that it stands for. The Torah education teaches people to reason, to think, to develop their mind together with their neshomas, to develop their minds together with their personalities, and that can't be done passively. You can't sit back and have your mind developed. You can't massage a person's mind. You can't... There's nothing you can do. It's only something which he can do himself by constant exercise, by constant using it, by analysis, by questioning, by thinking, by deepening one's involvement. Only that way can one involve oneself in learning Torah in a creative way. And likewise with all the other mitzvahs. The posture is important. The way one sits, the way one stands. The way some people sit in davening. There's no way that they can come even close to saying all the words. I mean, by keeping awake, I mean, consciously. It's not possible. It's people do it. A lot of people sit in a shir sometimes. The posture will is not only an expression of where the person's holding, that adds to where you're holding. And again, using our same example. Ever seen a person playing the violin in a lounge chair? You never see. And if you did, you're in the shir. You're not even going to sit and listen to him. Why not? What difference does it make holding the violin? It's not what difference does it make how he's sitting? Of course it makes a difference how you're sitting. It makes a difference how you walk, it makes a difference how you stand, it makes a difference how you sit, it makes a difference how you move your limbs. Everything makes a difference if you're involving your total personality. And if you're not involving your total personality, what are you messing around with? I'd rather go and learn monkey tricks. If one's involved in Torah, if one wants to grow and develop through Torah, it needs the entire personality, which includes one's body. And the posture has to be right. One sits upright, one sits forward, one sits with alertness. And if one sits with alertness, there's a chance that one will think with alertness. There's a chance. If one doesn't sit with alertness, there's absolutely no chance. I mentioned one of the recent shiurim, the importance of shmir, of listening properly, how difficult it is to listen properly. Just on the level of concentration, before one comes even to the level of understanding and analyzing, just shmir, just to hear what is being said. To listen for 5 minutes is terribly difficult. To listen to a person for 10 minutes is even more difficult. The psychologists work out, I think 15, 20 minutes already one loses concentration. That's unacceptable in a Torah group of people. In a Torah group of people, a person is expected to be able to concentrate at peak performance for an hour and a half. In the old days, by old days I'm talking only about one generation ago. Shiurim used to be 6-7 hours long. With short breaks in between. Rebellion used to give shiurim of 6 and 7 hours. Not in my time, not when I knew him, but certainly when my father learned under him in London, people used to walk on the Shabbos from all over the town, and distances in London are enormous, to hear the shiur of rebellion, but the shiur was 6-7 hours at a time. And what concentration it required. The Hasidim one still has, Fabrenians and shiurim, which take hours and hours, broken up into sections. That mind can't be achieved without an alertness of body. It's not possible. It's completely impossible. And one starts with mastering one's own nature. One starts with mastering the body. That's the easiest. Master the body is step number one. If one's able to master the body, it's possible to move from there with exercise and with concentration, to master the emotions, to master the distractions, to master the concentration, to master fatigue. All these things can be mastered, but the first step is to master the body. A person whose body can't even be mastered, he's trying to listen and his body's falling asleep. What is it? So if he's sitting upright, pen rechot, and he's falling asleep, look, you say it's noise. He's trying and he can't. He's so tired. But if he's lounging and falling asleep, that means he can't even tell his body to sit upright, never mind his eyes to stay open. Can't even tell his body to sit upright. What chance has he got? Nothing at all. And these are all basics, but in all rush to become frum nowadays, one forgets the basics. In the rush to become frum, one forgets how to grow, how to develop, and how to basis on which future growth can take place. And meanwhile, let us use them at least on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a time which expresses our mastery over nature. For one day, we sleep very little, we detach ourselves from materialism, we don't eat. For one day, we act as if we've really mastered nature. The idea is that we should get a taste of what it's like. Sometimes by acting out the part, even though it's not real, even though it's a bit of a fake, by acting it out, at least one gets a feeling of what it's really like, what it can be. Let's utilize that on Yom Kippur. Let's involve ourselves entirely on Yom Kippur from beginning to end. Let's daven loud, with body posture which is active, with minds which are active, with mouths which are active, with eyes which are active, with ears which are active. Let no part of our bodies and no part of our minds and as little as possible of our souls be dead and asleep during Yom Kippur. And if from there we can build up and use that exercise to retain some kind of standard of alertness throughout the experiences of the Yom Kippur to come and afterwards the year to come, Mitzvah Hashem, as a result of that we'll be able to conquer our natures, and with that we'll be able to rise above other natures, and while possibly not being able to conquer death, we would be able to conquer the effects of death, master our Yetzirah in a way that we're able to dedicate our things to doing the things we wish to do, the things we want to do, and the things we have to do. I wish you all an easy Yom Kippur, an easy fast, and a year of nafas and achievement.